That's amazing. Can you share your journey? Because I mean, I know your journey. I would love listeners also to.
We kind of enjoyed the smaller success. I mean, we never had a big goal or audacious goal, or rather, I never set any goal or target for the business. We just said, let's.
There's like a lot of anticipation when the order is in the process, still is getting delivered. You know, will they fit well? Has the customer really liked it? There is.
Of course, there is for everyone. Every garment is meant for a customer, right? I've not done anything beyond that in terms of personal branding because I feel, I mean, sometimes you may talk too much, but you may under-deliver, right? What is the point of just putting post and you? It doesn't mean who you are actually.
This is why you need people like us, like Blue Stream, but we'll help you brand yourself. So was there one message you want to give out to these young minds who coming, who, you know, who want to come into digital space, want to do something in the digital space?
I would say, don't follow me.
I'm Tasneem Masood, and welcome to the Social Sphere. Today's episode is all about personalization, and we have the CEO of CBazaar, Rajesh Nahar. CBazaar is one of the oldest online Indian ethnic wear brands. So let's hear it from the pioneers of personalization and e-commerce. Welcome, Rajesh. Welcome to the show. And it's been a long journey, almost 2 decades in digital space. And congratulations on getting publicly listed. So how does it feel to be one of the oldest players in e-commerce?
I think I'm thankful to everyone. Thank you, first of all, for inviting me for this session. And I'm sure whatever experience we share is going to be very useful for all of us in this space. I feel we as a company is very blessed because we had gone through a lot of changes in this industry and the industry landscape, especially in the digital world. And it's been a phenomenal ride over the period of 15, 20 years. And we're enjoying this. We're learning a lot. And I think there's a lot more to come the coming years.
That's amazing. Can you share your journey? Because I mean, I know your journey. I would love listeners also to.
Yeah, I think I have shared this to a lot of forums, a lot of people. But just to give a quick background, myself and Ritesh, we started this while we were studying. And we started in 1998 as a big basket model, like selling fruits and vegetables. We were known as ChennaiBazaar.com. But we were too early in the space, digital space, or rather e-commerce. And soon we got into railway ticketing. And railway ticketing was doing very good because people can just book the tickets online on Chennai Bazaar and we deliver the tickets to their doorstep.
So you like delivered physical tickets?
Physical tickets. So this was much before IRCTC. And then we were about to get into bus ticketing as well, once we started train ticketing. Unfortunately, we were asked to shut down by railways because they didn't want anybody else to start railway ticket booking before IRCTC and all that. Then we got good traction from Indians overseas, especially in North America. And they asked us if we could deliver something to the family back in India on special occasions. So that's where exactly the next phase of our journey began. And we delivered flowers, sweets, cakes, Valentine's, birthdays, Mother's Day.
So you used to send it from here? I'm sure flowers, you can't do that. You would.
No, we'll deliver in India.
Oh, in India. So from there, they book and then you deliver to relatives here.
Yeah. So that was very good. I mean, we were bootstrapped. We started seeing the first few dollars coming into a bank account.
How did that feel?
Oh, that was awesome. Every time, we saw an order, even that was $5, $6, but that was such a joyful moment for us. And I still cherish those emotional, moments. And then we launched saris as a category because people want to send saris to their wives or girlfriends or mothers.
They wanted to send it as to relatives gift. Here. Okay.
As a gift. Soon, what we saw was that category grew. More number of people wanted to send.
Than the flowers and gifts and all.
Yeah. And for us, it worked very well because saris is not a perishable item like flowers or cakes. So, and then naturally, some customers said, okay, why don't you deliver saris to overseas to us? Mm. We don't have access to Indian clothing and all that. So we started delivering overseas. And eventually we named CBazaar came from Chennai Bazaar. So Chennai became
C. Just shortened the Chennai to C.
So that was, I would say CBazaar was born in 2005. and completely new era for us. And we grew up the business from there.
So that's when you started adding more categories to the Indian ethnic wear.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds simple adding more categories in today's context.
How did you realize that, you know, that is the category you wanted to, you know, work on?
So I think we had to learn everything through the message or the communication coming from our customers. Mm. None of us had traveled overseas at that point of time. And so as our customers said, okay, I like this, I don't like this, all that. So from there, we realized that, okay, there is a huge opportunity, a huge market for that. I was coming back to adding more categories. Like today, we can see we can add more categories. In those days, category itself was not defined. What I mean to say is the supply chain, right, across the country, nobody believed that an ethnic wear or a sari can be sold online.
Can be sold, yeah.
So we had to educate all our suppliers, manufacturers that don't worry, we will sell that. Selling is not your headache. You have to supply to us. And that was a, you know, for the first few years, we had to go through that journey to build the supply chain. And then eventually it scaled up.
It scaled up. How does that feel like, you know, when you look back at your journey? I mean, yeah, there have been a lot of changes. Like when you started in 1995, the technology, internet was not at its best, right?
Right. So certainly there was no technology backup for us. Like today we have very much the likes of Magento, Shopify, easy to build
websites.
Time, right? And those days,
and also marketing has become so easy these days.
Absolutely. Those days, nothing existed. So we had to figure out the best way to reach out to our customers. We did a lot of road shows in US and UK. I mean, for us to acquire customer was a big task. Mm-hmm. A lot of time was spent on that. And the journey from there was basically that, you know, we kind of enjoyed the smaller success. I mean, we never had a big goal or audacious goal, or rather, I never set any goal or target for the business. We just said, let's experience every single order, make sure that order customers are really happy.
For you, the goal was that one order, fulfill that one order.
Absolutely. And take customers' feedback. Because then, only then we realized that, you know, whatever we're selling is not enough. Customers expecting something beyond that. What I meant by beyond that is a value addition on top of that. That's where this whole made-to-measure concept evolved in CBazaar.
So when you bring up this point of made-to-measure and all that and all, especially in Indian ethnic wear, which is an occasion, you know, wear category, personalization plays a major role, right? I mean, I would like, when I go for a wedding or for any occasion, I would have a design in my mind or a color in my mind, and I would have a particular fit in my mind. So how have you, you know, and when did you realize that, yes, personalization is something that I should focus on, especially, you know, when it comes to fashion, which is, you've seen a lot of these brands, they're all mass produced, and mass production is, you know, plays a major role in fashion, right? So personalization is not an easy thing, especially in online. So when did you realize that, yes, personalization is the way to go, and that's how I can enhance customer experience?
See, when we started delivering saris, even we started selling salwar and lehenga and all that, it was very difficult for us to get customers' measurements. So customers used to say, okay, I love the product, but unfortunately, I cannot wear it.
Yeah, that's one problem. We see that across, right, when it comes to Indian ethnic wear, the sizing or the measurement, the fit, basically, because getting a blouse stitch, you buy a sari, you have to get a blouse stitch. You get an unstitched salwar, it has to be stitched. And the fit definitely does not come out well. So how do you ensure
that? So the moment we spoke to our customers, they said they can't wear it, but they love the product. We asked them why. And they said, it's not fitting me well. And two things came out of that, right? One is the standard measurements of an Indian customer or women, I would say, who is our target customer. Or the profile of the measurements of an Indian woman and the profile of the same Indian woman who is living in North America for a few years.
Are two different.
Two different. The sizes are two different, completely different. So we had to figure out how exactly we measure the customers so that we could get it stitched as per the measurements. So that was again a learning curve for us. We did a lot of trial and error methods. I mean, I'll give you an example. We told customers, before we stitch and send you the actual garment, we'll make a dummy garment for you in a simple plain cotton fabric. We got your measurements. We'll send a trial outfit to you. You get that And if you feel it's all fitting well, or probably if you feel that the armhole is tight, or if the you know, chest area or the waist is not fitting you well, you let us know. Then we'll incorporate that in the actual garment, so that the actual garment, which is an expensive garment, doesn't get spoiled due to, you
know, and the fit is better.
So that kind of, you know, I mean, of course, our customers loved it, but the kind of joy what we got in doing something which was, you know, customers never imagined somebody will do online, again from overseas.
That is one level next, right? I mean, next level for personalization. One is you just stitch and send it. Another one is you ensure the fit is right.
Yeah.
Trial fits.
Absolutely. So first we wanted to solve the fit issue. Mm-hmm. Fitment has to be perfect.
But how do you manage the logistics and all? It would have been too much of back and forth communication between the customer, the team, and I'm sure you would have had different teams at different levels, right, to pass on the message.
So we had a small tailoring unit. We hired some designers, especially from NIFT and all reputed institutes. They taught us how to, you know, handle customer measurements, validate whether the measurements are right, and also educate the tailors and the masters to get the product stitched. Okay, both Ritesh and me, we are not from the fashion background. It was not by choice, but just as a revolution process, we got into this industry. Then the designers helped us to set up a process, right? And that was all manually handwritten in the language which our tailors would understand. I mean, just to give you context, today, every single item or composition of the garment is digitized. Even, for example, this collar, the neckline, everything is in digital format. And the communication to the customer is something which customer will understand that, okay, this is how your neckline is going to be, round neck or sweetheart neck and all that. But the same message to the tailor who is ultimately stitching would be in a format which he will understand. So everything
in the language he understands?
In the language what he'll understand. So make sure that is properly taken care of. Even the neck depth or the kind of styling or the stitch, the seam we have to do on the, say for example, shalwar pant or even a straight pant. All of that information is transferred to our tailors. So a lot of effort has gone in the whole process of making sure the fitment is right. But beyond that, what else we tried in personalization was we launched something called trendy designer blouse. I mean, blouse was one thing which customers always loved it. Though it's a small category, but if the blouse is stitched well, designed well to the customer's satisfaction, I mean, even if the sari is okay, customer would love that whole ensemble just because the blouse is amazingly good, right? Both in fitment and design. So we ask customers what kind of embroidery you would like to have on the blouse, what kind of fabric you would like to have on the blouse. So those information our designers would collect from the customers. We stitched it, or I mean, we produced that and we shipped to customers. So then customers started loving Seabazaar more. I mean, they built an emotional connect with Seabazaar. I mean, just to give you an example or context, I meet my customer who has been shopping with me since 2005. Even now, she writes to me, she greets to me, or I greet to her on every New Year. And then she advises me what I should do and what I should not do.
That's amazing, right?
Yeah, because she is looking from a outside perspective, right? And she's kind of a sounding board to me and telling me this is what you should.
That's amazing, because you get the customer feedback, a customer's perception of the brand and what the brand.
Customer, the market, the competitive landscape.
What the customer actually expects from you, what they look forward to get from you.
Yeah.
So it's been a very long journey. You know, you would have started as, you know, personalization as one thing. You know, you would have added one component of personalization. And now over the journey, how has it been? The change? Have you changed the entire process? I'm sure, you know, with learnings, we keep changing.
So one of the, you know, tough part for us is basically scale the business and yet provide the entire gamut of this personal.
Correct. Because it's not easy. See, when it comes to an offline space, it's easy. You just can walk into a designer studio. There's a stylist who understands, or probably to a tailor. You wouldn't get the entire experience with a tailor. But it's a one-on-one conversation. Personalization is always one-on-one, right? How have you, you know, I mean, yours is an online business which is on at scale to the mass. So how do you ensure that in terms of having incorporated that on the website, the tech that is involved there? How do you communicate that message?
Sure. So see, what we did was every single message or communication we get from customers as a special request, we have all the data. So we looked into all the data and we said, okay, by making a small change in the way, in the measurement form, that would solve the problem for the customer, not to give a special instruction, but just say yes or no in your measurement form. So that, for example, if a customer wants a Kanken to be added to her lehenga, right? Earlier, she will write in the special instruction column that I want a Kanken to be included in my lehenga. But then we incorporate that in the measurement form, cups, in the blouse. Likewise, all of the instructions, I mean, majority of the instructions, I'm sure 100% of the instructions cannot be digitized. But the majority of those instructions we had digitized. So by doing that, what happens is our process remains the same of production. But the communication between the customer and our support team, post placing an order, we have considerably reduced it. So customers do not have to get back to us after placing an order.
So there's not too much of back and forth communication.
Yes. Yeah. So by cutting that, we have kind of filtered out all the miscommunication, or rather anything which is not understood properly.
Or something that's not required, and made the process easy, basically, both the customer as well as the team behind.
And one more important thing, or very interesting thing what we did was, because we have so much of data of customers' measurements, we built an engine which can extrapolate the entire body measurements by just taking the customer's bust measurements and height.
Oh, that's amazing.
So earlier...
This is an in-house...
We developed it in-house. Earlier, what used to happen is we used to take customers' entire body measurements. And many customers felt difficult to give their body measurements.
Yeah, because not a lot of us understand how to take the measurements also, right?
Even if you take the measurements, you're not sure whether it's right or wrong.
Yeah, and you can't do it yourself because, you know, sometimes you hold the measuring tape too tight or too loose.
Yeah. So then we said, okay, most of our customers, many customers who don't, you know, the bust size and height, these are the two important measurements. So once they give these two measurements, the entire body measurement extrapolates. And if a customer wants, you can add or, you know, reduce a few inches here and there. But I've seen that almost 85% of our customers, they just give these two measurements and they're very happy with that. So the time it takes for them to place an order is considerably reduced. And their measurements is always saved in their profile. They could always...
So they go back and use the same measurement. Yeah. So how does this tech work for, you know, an Indian customer and a customer who's settled in US? Because you said the measurements vary.
Yeah. So in recent times, we have seen a lot of traffic from India is growing, and also transactions from India is also growing. But I see that experience, what we have designed for an American customer, requires some kind of change for the Indian customer, because Indian customers are not still acclimatized to shopping online with made-to-measure measurements, right?
So they're still skeptical.
They're skeptical. And also, because we have so many languages, right? It's not just one language. So if I have a customer from Northeast or even from, you know, anywhere in North or South, down South, if they don't understand what we have written, right, then they may go wrong. So they're not confident. So they normally buy unstitched. But in the recent times, we have seen customers started buying stitched garments, made-to-measure garments from us. And we are also learning from their experience, and we're going to change, or we're rather going to have a different experience for an Indian sea bazaar than an American.
So that's something that you're still learning.
We are still learning and we are trying to do that.
But, so personalization is not just in the product. I understand this category, the space that you are in, at a product level, you do personalization. But then personalization also goes on the, you know, the shopping experience on your website, on your marketing communications and all that. And also, how do you, you know, do that?
Yeah. I think that's a great thing, because I'll give you one stat. Earlier, our average session time used to be close to 7 to 9 minutes. I'm just giving a broad range, okay? Now it is reduced to 3.5 to 5 minutes. Okay. Because I don't know why. Maybe customers are impatient, or probably the moment they are not able to figure out the product which they want to see in the first few minutes, they'll just walk out.
Yeah, right.
Right. And there is no cost of switching between one website and another website on your mobile device.
Very true.
So the challenge for us is, how do we strike it? Like in a podcast, what you're doing, in the first 2 minutes, if you're not able to attract the attention of the viewer, then the whole, you know, I'm just relating to that. So for us, the challenge is, in the first 1 minute, I need to show something to the customer which the customer would fall in love with. So again, this is a learning process, but we have implemented a lot of data points on every SKU. So we have something called an internal rating score. Right. And the internal rating score comes from 8 to 9 different variables, right? That includes the number of times the product is viewed, number of times the product is added to cart, number of products times the product is bought, feedback of that product from the customer. All that is included. So that way we are able to sort the products in the website. On top of that, we have implemented a machine learning program. We have partnered with a company from France, and they are able to help us in giving products which is highly, highly personalized based on the device through which they're browsing.
And is it personalized to the person? Like, for example, I get to see what I really want to see?
At a broad level, because what happens...
No, let's say I've been browsing. I've come 2-3 times on your website. I've checked out your products and all that. Let's say I've even shopped with you once. Yeah. So the next time I come back,
yes,
you personalize that entire experience.
Yes, yes. Based on your previous purchase behavior, your browsing behavior, right? And also, we understand which device you're going
to... How does that matter, the browsing device?
So, why it matters is because the average click position is something which what we measure. So, when you come to the website or any listing page, so we have like 40 products shown, right? Which is the first product you click so that you land into the product detail page? So, that's called average click position. Yeah. Our objective is to keep reducing the average click position every time a customer browses the website, right? So, having that goal intact, we are able to optimize, learn from the browsing behavior and keep reducing.
No, on the device, how does the device play a role when it comes to...
It's not about the device, but it's about the ID of the device. So, the ID of the device is something which our system understands. So, whenever a user browses from the same ID, it's a unique ID. When the user is browsing from the same ID, we are able to understand.
Oh, yeah. So, if I switch the browser, then it... Yeah. Yeah, so, the system has to re-log again. Yeah.
The device, but if you're not logged in, then it will be difficult for us to understand.
So, you will consider as another
user. Right. Then we have a generic personalization. But for a deep level personalization,
you have to have the same device. Yeah. Okay. That's amazing.
I mean, I'm learning from various brands. One of the brands which I admire a lot is Stitch Fix. Mm-hmm. Right. So, it's not about the... For a customer, many times a customer gets confused what kind of, garment will suit her body, right? You can customize anything.
Yeah.
But what kind of
recommending
fabric,
what suits you?
What suits you? Color, fabric, texture, the fall of the fabric.
A personal stylist, basically.
Yeah. So that's something which Stitch Fix have done an amazing job. I've always used as a benchmark. And I'm trying to see how exactly we could learn from that. And we implemented something called OLS based on location, your look and your style. I customize suggestion. I kind of, give a right suggestion based on what you want.
So when you, introduce this feature of personalization in the beginning, which is, basically at that point of time, what you decided personalization would be was stitching it based on their custom measurements and all that. Now personalization, obviously, over the years have taken a different role for you, right? So when you introduce that then, and as you keep changing the feature and as you keep adding new features to this entire journey of the customer, how did customers respond to it, or how did they receive it? And
So
you definitely have these older customers that you're still in touch with, right? So what was their feedback?
As I said earlier, they used to struggle a lot in terms of, choosing what product to buy, understanding how the product will look on them, right? But today, the amount of visibility or the clarity, what we communicate on every product, that makes their life easier, right? So it's an evolution. We have kind of cracked to a good extent on that. The second thing is, now, when I look at my customers, like we just did a whole lot of outfit for an American Idol winner. He's a singer, and for his entire dance troupe in the recent video which he launched, the entire dance troupe, they're from Hawaii, entire dance troupe outfits were custom stitched by us, right? And they are not traditional Indian clothing. They're like more of a Western clothing. But I was surprised that how they figured out who is the right brand to talk to get this kind of customer.
For personalization.
So imagine 60 dancers. Each of them are different height, different body shape. And all of them are wearing our outfits and everything's perfect with it. Not even a single complaint from them. So they are regular customers. They kind of buy a lot from us. We are also, I mean, okay, I won't name the film, but we have also, you know, been approached by a Spanish film costume designer and her production for the crew of the film. I mean, the film has a story base connected to South Asia.
So
right from the actress, the lead actress, the male actor, and others, everything is done by Sea Bazaar.
Oh, that's amazing.
So I think all of these gives us a lot of joy. I mean, that we are able to, you know, make people feel happy and confident what they're wearing.
So fashion is all about creativity, and again, personalization is another level of create. I mean, it's another level of creation because you're doing it for one person, right? It's not at mass. So how does how does the team get excited? You know, when you know you personalize something for a client and the client is really happy.
That's a celebration moment for us. I mean, every time when we get a feedback from our customers in any form, whether it's picture or video.
Is there like a lot of, anticipation when the order is in the process still is getting delivered? You know, will they fit well? Has the customer really liked it? There is?
Yeah, of course, there is for everyone. Because every garment is meant for a customer, right?
Correct. I'm sure it's a unique piece, right? Because not going to be the same.
So, in fact, in our package, all the people, right from the designer to the gentleman who is stitching the garment, his name is also mentioned in the package. So the customer knows that this is done, stitched by this person. This has been packed by this person. So there is a personalization there, right? Wow. The customer knows that it is not something, a standard off-the-shelf garment which she's buying. It is made for her. It is made by this person. So that kind of, you know,
So the face moment, behind, you know, the scenes have come out saying the hands have made it. Yes. This is it.
Yes. And also it gives a lot of joy for our tailors and the people who do the finishing. For them, when they see or when they hear that a customer thousands of kilometers away from where we are, whom we have not seen, not met, not spoken to, is enjoying the garment which I stitched.
I'm sure, because when they're given, you know, a requirement or a request saying that I want a specific thing or I don't want a can. I'm sure some of these designs are complicated also, right? It's not easy to make. And when they make it, obviously, and when the customer likes it, it's definitely a great moment. Also, when you were talking about all this, I was just wondering how do other brands do personalization? And, I mean, I'm sure it does. Not with regards to fashion, but in general, when it comes to e-commerce, what are the other things, you know?
See, totally. Like, you look at Airbnb. I use Airbnb a lot. So, with my history, Airbnb knows what are my preferences.
The kind of apartments you like.
Yeah, or this kind of vacation I want, or rather the experiences I want in terms of not only staying, but also in terms of, you know, the experience, whether it's going on a trek, or doing a, you know, beach adventure. So those kind of personalization, what they offer to me, kind of saves my time in terms of, rather than exploring all that and then getting, you know, bogged up in what to select, what not to select, given that we always have limited time for our vacations. So Airbnb is one brand I'm a big follower of that. Of course, Netflix, right? I think...
Definitely.
Netflix.
We all know the amount of personalization they do.
I was fortunate to meet the co-founder of Netflix just 2 weeks back. And it was an amazing story to hear from him, how exactly Netflix started and, you know, they went through different models. I was kind of able to correlate with Chennai Bazaar, Sea Bazaar journey and what Netflix had gone through. But again, they're improving a lot. They've kind of built a solid brand purely because of the personalization.
Obviously, personalization requires a lot of data learning and you need to understand, you know, what customers are buying and all that. And unless you understand my pattern, you would definitely not be able to suggest anything.
True.
So, for you to build this entire brand, a personalized brand, and give this personalized shopping experience, I'm sure it would be custom developed, right? Because you started in 1995. So What do you think about, you know, these platforms like Shopify, Magento, and you have WooCommerce and Wix and all that, and all that's come up. And I also recently came across another platform which is completely on AI. I just need to type in and then it generates, throws the website out. But I don't know how, you know, the shopping experience would be there when it comes to personalizing the entire experience.
I think today the technology or the industry landscape has evolved so much that it's always good to be on Shopify or Magento. It's a standard platform, plug and play. And then all the developers or the ecosystem is all working first on Shopify or Magento and then offering their solutions or APIs to custom-made website like ours. So for an entrepreneur who is going to start fresh, it depends on what he's going to offer. See, personalization
could be different people.
For us, it's different for them. But I think first, all of the questions, the objectives has to be clearly defined, what exactly they want to do or what exactly they want to offer. I'm sure most of these solutions are available on both Shopify and Magento.
Which one is easier?
I have not used either of them, but what I hear from my friends and my industry colleagues, Shopify is very easy. And because I think anyone can just build it like that. It also depends on the question. What it comes on Shopify or these marketplace driven apps is which app to choose for. So, for example, if you want to set up a logistics backend connection, you'll have 10 different options. Now, that's a challenge. Which one do you have reviews and all that? But still, you will have to try out two, three different players
and then
figure out this is working, this is not working. So it's always a discovery, process. So I'm just talking about logistics is just one part, but that's a whole lot of, various plugins, what exactly you're using. But for a company, for an organization where you don't have a tech team or an engineering team as part of your organization, then you must go with Shopify or Magento. But if you want to offer a, top of the class experience, like I'm using Netflix or Uber or Airbnb, you need to have your own core engineering as part of your organization. Otherwise, it'll be very difficult to just depend on, these kind of platforms. So it all...
It's all completely on what your thing is, the product, or what is that you're offering out there.
Or what's your plan, basically. How much you want to invest, and then what point of time you can always switch from this platform to that platform.
So also, when I talk to different brands, a lot of brands I've seen that, they jump and they have a website, but then sometimes they jump in and say, let's create an app because everybody is using an app and app is the next thing. What is your take on this? Because I know it's not easy, building an app, first of all, and then, the entire running the entire app is also not easy. Yeah. It's completely two different things, the website and the app. What is your take on it? Or what is that one message you want to give out to people who think, okay, fine, we should start an app?
I have two different messages based on the geography where the customers are. I think India has leapfrogged in terms of smartphone adoption and also app adoption. In India, people prefer an app over a browser-based website. That's my observation. However, in the United States, people are okay to just browse through the web, through their browser and make a purchase, and they find that more comfortable than through an app. I've seen from my experience. Second, if you have app and website, as you rightly said, it's very difficult to make sure that, all the features what you have in the website is equally available on the app. So for that, again, you need to have that kind of...
And also managing, right from, adding the products to, the entire stock management, the messages,
the changes,
the updates. I think, it's two different things, right?
So I think data layer, it's the same. So that way, that's not a problem. The problem is in the skin of the app or the UX of the app and the features what you have, right? It's easy to, develop a feature and roll it out on the website. Mm-hmm. But to roll it out on the website, on the app, it takes time. And also doing A/B testing, mm-hmm. right? For if you want to try it out this for a week. If it works, great. If it doesn't work, you have to try a different thing, right? That you can do easily on the website, but not on the app. So it's a call someone has to take.
Again, comes down on the investment. How much are you willing to spend?
Yeah, totally.
So with, you know, AI being ingrained into our daily lives, we use AI, like now everybody's using AI. It's not just brands, even, you know, people, common people have also started, you know, using AI. What do you think are the trends that we should keep an eye out for in 2024 when it comes to personalization?
Totally. See, I think AI has been embraced very nicely or very quickly by so many people in this space, digital space. What I see is in the next few years, I mean, this AR and VR is going to take over in a very big way. We have seen Apple has launched Vision Pro, and it's just going to be a matter of time when you have better versions of that or improvised version of that. I see that my customers will be wearing a wearable and they'll be browsing the website without even touching their mobile and making a transaction, right? So again, there, what it's certainly a huge play by AI. On top of that, you know, you still have to make the selection of the products which has to appear on the wearable more sharper than it is right now. So, which means your coding, or rather your logic, has to be much more sharper. And for that, you need to have AI, right? So you have to learn continuously, and you need to have extra, you know, intelligence horsepower to show the right product on your.
So you're saying AR and VR is something that we should keep an eye on.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So are you working on something for your customers?
I am in the process. Still, I have to do some testing. That requires a lot of work in terms of see all the assets what we have is 2D assets. Mm-hmm. So we have to convert to 3D assets. Yeah. So that's some work required.
That's what required. But yeah, it's in the pipeline.
We are getting to that. I believe, I'm a strong believer that will help us a lot.
So, you know, because you were talking about investments and, you know, like we were talking about, you know, if we had to select a platform, we had to keep in mind, one is definitely the investment. Second is, you know, what is that you have to offer and all. So on those lines, I was just wondering, as an e-commerce entrepreneur, how much would you, you know, how much percentage would you attribute to tech, to marketing, to people? Because some, I get a lot of,
depends,
you know,
what
I like
stage
this,
you are in.
Exactly. So let's say someone who started out, someone who's wants to scale. So these are the two stages, right?
See, when you're starting, you should use your tech investments as a capital investment because you're building an asset, right? And then you will have OPEX as you grow the business. I mean, there is no one fine unit economics which I would say this is the optimal unit economics. What do you mean by unit economics is what is your revenue, what percentage of your revenue is going on marketing, what percentage of revenue is going on technology. There is no one standard, you know, percentage distribution across the unit economics. But what I would always, you know, tell young entrepreneurs with whom I meet is always make sure you know what is your current unit economics and what is your desired unit economics you need to achieve at what time, right? Because unless you have that clarity, you will not be able to, or you'll rather be burning capital. And that is not a good thing, right? Those days are gone. Now you have to make sure you are in the path of profitability. So unit economics is the very key thing on that.
And what about the marketing spend? Because I also come across these brands, especially, you know, new brands that comes up saying, who are very reluctant to spend on digital, but then they want results immediately on digital.
I mean,
one of the oldest players, definitely you would have some, you know, some insights there saying how it works. I mean, see, a lot of people don't understand that, you know, the spend on digital is equally or more than what you spend offline.
See, I think you should look at digital spend, not just spending on your PPC or shopping ads. That is not just alone the digital spend. The digital spend or the digital investment has to be one, you need to build a cult or a brand where people follow you.
Yeah, so you have to keep some for branding.
Branding. So branding requires your communication, your creatives, or what is the full message you're going to give in your this one, right? That is also digital spend. That's also an investment, right? So that investment will give you results maybe after 6 months or a year or something, or it depends on how you're taking it forward. But that's going to give you free traffic or a low cost traffic. Of course, there is a cost. It's going to give you low cost traffic. and a gratification will happen over a period of time. But when you're spending on paid campaigns or shopping campaigns, both on Meta,
obviously
as well
the,
as Google,
the goals are also different, right? Yeah. Here, this is more about reach, awareness when it comes to branding. Yeah. When you're talking about this, this is about conversion.
Yeah. So today, what is happening is the cost or the ROAS for a digital spend, for a shopping ad campaign, is going up. I've seen this post COVID; it is just inflating. Like by 15-20% year on year. So it is going to be very tough for a brand or a new brand to just depend on the paid shopping campaigns to get revenue. Because you will get revenue. End of the day, if your ROAS is poor, then your unit economics again goes bad. And sustainability becomes a question mark.
Since you brought up this topic of branding, I'm going to the next section, which is my favorite section, which is beyond brands. I'm going to talk about personal branding.
Personal branding. Okay.
So, how, as an entrepreneur, as a founder, it is important to brand yourself, right? Because you represent the brand wherever you go. So, how have you ensured?
I have never consciously thought about personal branding all this time, okay? For me, personal branding is basically, is my stakeholders willing to hear me out? Or accept whatever I'm saying. If that happens, then I've done very good in my personal branding. Okay. What I mean by stakeholders is basically my customers, my investors, my team, right? And the most important thing is my colleagues and team. Because if I'm able to communicate in a way where my team, all the way from the organization pyramid, can understand what is the goal or what is the path we have taken and what exactly we are going to offer to our customers, then I think if they accept that, then I would say I've done great in my, you know, personal branding, because they're willing to accepting. Okay, this is what exactly I feel is the personal branding thing, and I've not done anything beyond that in terms of personal branding, because I feel, I mean, sometimes you may talk too much, but you may under deliver, right? What is the point on just putting post? And it doesn't mean who you are actually.
This is why you need people like us, like Bluestream, that will help you brand yourself. So as a leader in personalization, how do you, you know, ensure the team, how do you inspire the team, to keep that ethos alive down the system?
I think my team gets inspired most from customers. Mm-hmm. Okay. The customer feedback is what exactly inspires the team. On top of that, when I come talk to my team members or discuss every time, or not every time, but most of the time I come out with new ideas or sometimes it's wacky ideas as well.
So you're that one crazy person who wakes up in the morning saying, let's do this.
Yes. I've been like that, you know, for all this while. And then somewhere I think my team also wants to break that monotone working style, and they like to explore new things and try it out. So out of 100 things, maybe 2 or 3 things have worked for us, and 97 things or 97% of things have not worked. But that's something which always keeps my team
motivated
on the toe. At the same time, they're very excited. Okay,
something new is going to come up anytime.
Yeah, even if I change experience on my website, They're excited. If I change the process in which my production is going to happen, it's not me, but it's my team who comes with a new idea, and then we brainstorm and we find it. That's also exciting. So it's an ongoing process. So it's not a conscious effort to, you know, excite our team. But it's self-excited.
It comes naturally to you.
Yeah.
So what is the legacy you want to leave behind?
I want to build something on sustainability. That's what you want.
I also understand that you do just in time, which means the customer can place an order. Yeah. I mean, with your private label that you launched recently.
Yeah. Totally. We don't hold inventory. Mm-hmm. So we are able to produce it just in time. So that way we are kind of cutting down on the damages of having excess inventory and all that. The second thing is basically I consciously keep thinking on how exactly I could do something in terms of we reduce the impact what it happens on the environment because of the space where we are in. So that's an area which I'm kind of exploring. I've explored in the past, I've failed, but I won't explore it again, right? And certainly, the legacy is CBizar itself is going to be a legacy. It's already a legacy, right? Brand.
And so much of learning, so much of experience that you have created, both for your team, for your stakeholders, for your customers, definitely.
I think for me, what gives joy is basically when I meet people who have been working with me, or rather who has worked with me in the past, and they are successful and they are still, you know, coming and saying, "Hi, Rajesh, it was great working with you and I've learned a lot from CBizar." Most of the people who leave CBizar, they always feel that this is not a workplace, this is cool. They learn, whether it's designers or technology, tech folks, or merchandisers, marketing people. Because here, you can do whatever you want to do. There's no boundaries that you have to work only in this area. If you're in customer support and if you want to do IT project management, we'll allow them. Okay. Right? So that way, they get to learn a lot. And I can
It's a very collaborative.
Yeah. I take pride in this, that my team who has worked with me in the past are all very, very connected to CBizar, and they feel it was one of the best experience what they've got in their professional career.
So was there one message you want to give out to these young minds who want to come into digital space, want to do something in the digital space? Could be entrepreneurs, could be, you know, young marketing professionals who want to make a mark in the digital space.
I would say don't follow me. I'm not the right guy because I don't understand them. What message can I give to them? And why would they understand me? What I'm trying to say here is, at a broad level, you need to build a sustainable business, right? You need to kind of, you know, solve a problem. I heard a quote from Mr. Alvin. What he said was, the illiterates of the 21st century are not the people who cannot read or write, but people who cannot unlearn and learn.
That's actually right. Very true.
They are the illiterates. You don't need to learn to read or write today.
You need to know how to unlearn and then learn. As we progress, basically, yeah.
And from the social fabric or social ecosystem where I come from, I think I have to work hard on unlearning. I think if you ask me what is my goal for 2024, start unlearning.
Is that the message you want to give out to the young minds also, saying that be open to unlearn and then learn?
So this message is for everyone, actually, right? Not only to young mind, but people who have got enormous experience.
Mm-hmm. For them also, yeah. Very true, very true. Thank you so much, Rajesh, for this. You know, it was lovely talking to you and learning your journey and how brands function, how this entire ecosystem functions. Thank you so much for those valuable insights.
Thank you. I hope whatever I said is going to help, you know, all the viewers of this particular podcast.
Definitely.
And thank you so much for, you know, making me a part of your podcast episode.
Thank you.